It's kind of like a muscle that when you have to live by faith, it gets easier the more you do it.
Welcome to the Family Man Show with Todd Wilson. This is the show where we remind dads of what's most important. I'm your host, Scott Moore. Thanks for joining us today. Hey, Todd, how's it going?
Hey, Scotty, it's cold outside. It is cold out there. I now podcast in the Family Man barn, so I had to take the dog out and then walk from our house to the barn, and the snow was crunchy. We've got about, 8 or 9 inches of snow, and it was minus 17 when I came out here. Right now,
say that again, minus 17.
Wow. The high today is supposed to be minus 12. We're just like in this world right now where the weathermen love it. They're like, they love saying polar vortex and we may not survive this. You know, God have mercy on our souls, that kind of thing. I mean, big babies. You got to come up here and see the Amish people are still using their buggies, you know, going to the grocery store, and some lady who looks like she's 75 is getting out of her buggy, carrying her bags, and it's 15 below zero.
That's impressive.
They probably gave birth on the way. You know, hey, that's the big news. And we're going to truncate our chit-chat time because we got a busy show today. But Ben and Rissa had their baby. Baby Hudson came. It was fast and furious. It was amazing. On Wednesday night, they were at our house just for a little bit. We were talking. It was about 9 o'clock, 9:30, and nothing was happening. And they said, well, she had an appointment that day. The doctor said probably in the next 48 hours. And they go home at 12 o'clock, Debbie wakes me up and she goes, Todd, we need to go over there now. They're going to the hospital. I'm like, what? Okay. And so we get up and we go across the yard, which is super convenient. And so we walk across the yard in the snow and, because they're going to go, and they're going to leave Renly behind. We bunk down in the guest room and I fell asleep at 2 o'clock in the morning. So 2 hours later, my wife goes, Todd, he's here. And I'm thinking, who's here? And I'm like, you the baby? No way. She goes, I the girls are going to go up there and I don't know if I should go or not. And I'm like right now? I said, you guys should go. So I stayed because I could sleep. I stayed and Debbie and Catherine and Maggie and Rissa's two sisters and mom all went up to the birthing center to see baby Hudson. They got back home. They didn't stay real long. They got back home about 5 a.m. and Debbie's like, well, they're going to be home sometime between 6 and 8. And I'm like, at night? No. She said, no, this morning. I'm like, you are kidding me. There's no way they're coming home. At 8 o'clock, they came in the house carrying this new baby. I had barely been out of bed. I don't even know if I got out of bed before, because they wanted to like introduce Renly to the baby without us there. So we kind of hung back and they brought Renly in. And later I saw the video and they bring Renly down from upstairs and they have the baby like laying on the couch. And she's like, your baby brother's here. And Riss is trying to go, he was in mommy's stomach and now he's out. And I'm like, it'd be more believable that the stork brought him because she went to bed and then there's a kid laying on the couch. So everybody's doing great. He had a little bit of jaundice, but I think that's doing better. And he had some painful baby things done to him. Yeah, I guess he had a little, they call it tongue tied. I never knew that. But like the skin underneath your tongue is like, it's closer. So they had to laser that off this morning. And I think in the next day or so, he gets the big C which we will just pause and think about that just for a minute. Hey, but today we have a special show. We're going to have three different dads with us, different times, because I thought maybe the next couple of weeks, Scott, we'd talk about work, you know, the jobs we do. And I started thinking about this when I came across one of these dads, because all three dads that we're going to talk to have unique jobs. And I just think it's kind of interesting to hear their stories. And but I don't want to steal any of their thunder. So we're going to talk to Jeremy Nunes first, and we'll go from there. Well, our first guest is Jeremy Nunes. And do you say it with an S or a Z, Jeremy?
S, just like you said it, home run.
Okay, okay. Jeremy, and I'm not going to tell him what you do yet, but why don't you, I met you, I don't know, a couple years ago, somewhere in Illinois, south of Chicago. Tell us about you and your family.
Well, I have a wife of 6 years, Sandra, and then we've got two kids, Eli, who is 4, and then Mia, who just turned 3 months. And maybe this will encourage other folks. My wife and I almost didn't make it. We broke up while we were engaged, actually, because she was mad I wouldn't break the law for her. She's 4'8", so I made her ride in a car seat.
You are. I would have broken up too. I would have broken up. Which is a great lead in to tell us what you do for a living.
Well, I am a stand up comedian. And as you mentioned, yeah, we crossed paths. I want to say it was Bethalto, right outside of St. Louis there.
I think you're close. I think you're right. Well, you're a stand up comedian. So tell us what you do. Before you tell us how you got there, what do you do, you know, during your show? What do you do? Is it Christian emphasis?
Well, I wouldn't say Christian. It's very clean. I don't do any like Bible jokes, I guess, so to speak.
Right.
But yeah, it's very clean. I would say 99% of the shows I do are either at churches or some sort of Christian event. Or a corporate event, like maybe a company Christmas party, something like that. And then once in a while, I'll still do a comedy club, but my show kind of transfers all over. So I can still do a super clean show in the comedy club, that same show works in a church or wherever.
Well, what you do just intrigues me so much because, you know, I mean, it's a big deal to be able to make your living being funny. What did you do before that? How'd you make that transition to be a comedian? Did you always want to be a comedian, or was it one of those things that kind of grew?
Well, I always wanted to do it. It's kind of a matter of finally having enough nerve to actually get in front of people and say, everybody, stop what you're doing. Watch me. I'm going to be funny.
Right, right.
So, yeah, it was kind of a slow transition. I think, like most guys, after I got out of college, I had already been doing it, you know, a little bit here and there at open mics, things like that. And after I got out of college, I moved to Chicago because that was sort of the biggest city where you could kind of start comedy around me. I worked during the day at a law firm, kind of just doing basic office work, and then made my way a little at a time, a club here and there. So I do maybe 2 paid shows a year, would lead to 4 paid shows a year, and then 8 paid shows a year, and eventually just kept growing and growing.
So people probably do expect you to be funny, but does your wife think you're just like not funny at all?
Well, she doesn't like the stunts I pull around the house to be funny.
Yeah, I know. They're a tough crowd. They're a tough crowd.
So she was in the shower not too long ago, and I snuck in there where the mirror was fogged up and wrote, "Go away, I was here first." So when she got out of the shower, she was very afraid until about 30 seconds later, she figured out it was me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You know, it's what you do is, I think the hardest part of, and we're going to talk to a couple other guys who do unique jobs. I think the hardest part is not the talent part, not the doing part, but maybe the step of faith, or, you know, just doing it, you know, because there are a lot of, it's a lot safer to go to your job and have them give you a paycheck and you get off X amount of days. It's scary doing what you do. What's the best part maybe of doing what you do?
The best part is when someone comes up after the show, and a lot of times it's someone who didn't look like they were enjoying the show while everybody else was, but they come up after and say, hey, thanks so much. I really needed that. You know, and then they give you a terrible backstory that they got terrible medical news, or they just lost somebody close to them, and then maybe friends brought them out to have a good time. So, you know, being told that you just made someone's day is really special.
That's awesome. That's awesome. What's the hardest part of being, maybe not a comedian, but being a self-employed comedian?
When the calendar looks empty is really scary. And so, actually a big step not too long ago, when my wife was about 3 months pregnant at the time and she got laid off. And then at that point, comedy was our only income. And so the step of faith I took, when most people would have tightened up their money, I actually spent about $1,500 in really strategic marketing to just really get all the shows I could lined up. And it actually paid off significantly. So, awesome. Yeah.
So, and I assume, I don't know about you, because once you start down that path, there's something about, and maybe it's pride, that it's hard to fill in those gaps sometimes with other things. You know, I know when I first started, you know, I went from having a job to having nothing. The first year, you know, I had 5 children. I made $2,000 doing what I do, but God took care of us. But, you know, then I was like, I was willing to do anything for a buck. I mean, if somebody said, I need my grass cut, you know, $25, I'm like, I'll do it. Do you still have those times? Because I know there's like this mental thing that says, if I say I need extra, maybe it means that I failed. I don't know if you feel that way, but I have.
Yeah, I think so. Well, as you mentioned earlier in our email discussion there, I worked as a small town mayor for about 4 years. And so while I was mayor, and let me tell you, it's not a luxurious salary by any means. So that kind of transitioned over into do a little bit of like municipal consulting on the side. Mm-hmm. So I never intended on doing that, but that's been a little bit of a help. In the beginning, one of the things I did, I was a cashier at a little touristy restaurant right next to Lincoln's Home in Springfield. And I worked there a couple days a week for a couple hours just to make a little bit of money. And I always had fun with it. So there were like tourists would come in and say, hey, well, we were at this place and Abe Lincoln had a connection. To that, does this building have any connection to Lincoln? And say, well, you know, Lincoln was a carpenter. He actually is rumored to have laid the floor here. Then all these people would take pictures of the floor. The owner would be like, Jeremy, please stop talking.
So it wasn't true?
No.
Yeah, there are probably like lots of scrapbook pages that are filled up by you. It's all built on a lie, ma'am. What about managing your time? Because I know some guys will say, well, you know, they're starting something. And I know, because since you travel, are there times where you have to say no? Are there times, is it hard to manage your time? Because you've got, you know, you feel that pressure of like, well, I've got a supply, but I got to be a dad and a husband at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, I do have to be a little bit selective on the shows I take. Now, back in the beginning, I mean, I've been doing this 16 years now. Back in the beginning, yeah, I would take anything I could just to get the money. But now I'm fortunate and blessed enough to be able to kind of look at the type of shows being offered to me and go, you know, that's not going to be good. So whether it's, you know, it's going to make me be gone too long and not come back with enough money, or just the type of show itself isn't going to be a good fit, I can at least turn stuff down if I know it's not going to be right.
You know, what would you tell the guy? You know, maybe he's not a comedian. Maybe he's got something else he's thinking about. Maybe he's thinking about being a window washer or starting his own business, or, you know, he plays the spoons or something. And I did meet a guy who made his living playing the spoons.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, What? How would you? Because I'll get guys who ask me, and they'll say, "Hey, Todd, you know, I really like to do what you do, you know, and go around and speak, and I'm thinking about doing it. What do you think?" And I'm like, "Well, what are you doing now?" And I'll say, "I said, are you speaking at all?" "No." And, you know, "Have you ever spoken?" "No." And I kind of start pushing him down the path. What would you say to the guy who's thinking about doing something that everybody else would say is crazy? Because I assume you heard some of that, or maybe didn't hear it out loud. But maybe your mother like broke down in tears, or your father, "This is my son. He wants to be a comedian."
Well, when I told my dad I wanted to be a comedian, he just looked at me and goes, "But you're not funny." but what I would say, and I remember reading an interview with Mark Cuban about this also, and it sounds like you went through it too. Whoever your spouse is has to understand the journey, because in the beginning, you're not going to make hardly anything at all. I mean, like you said, $2,000. I think that's roughly what I made my first year too. And then even a few years in, I remember I had two different girls I was actually dating, and I couldn't figure out which one I wanted to kind of get serious with. And so I actually told each of them to see which would understand. I said, "Just so you know, I'm still kind of making the comedy journey. Last year, I profited $10,000. And then they both broke up with me. But so between the climb, and then also it takes so much of your time to get it going in the beginning, that what I didn't realize was going to happen was any spare time you have is going to go to your spouse, your kids, your immediate family. So your extended family, your extended friends get less and less and less time with you. That was really the hardest part for me.
That's interesting. Because you have to be pretty tough skinned too, because I would agree with you, you know, even where Mark Cuban said, you know, you want your wife to be on board. I wanted my wife to, I didn't want to feel like I was dragging my family through this thing for Todd's big adventure and then them hate me, you know. But were you surprised that the whole world didn't just knock out? Because I guess I was surprised. I just thought as soon as I told people, you know, here's what I'm doing, the whole world would want me, and nobody even cared. And so it's plugging, you know, it's you take what you can and you pass out business cards and you shake a lot of hands and you just keep plugging away.
Yeah. And the hard part for me too, see, I came up through school. I was not the class clown. So even like the old schoolmates, you know, would say, "Wow, that surprises me. I never would have thought you would be a comedian." And so I didn't really have a whole lot of support around, you know, my hometown. I had to kind of go out and prove it elsewhere. And then when I got a little momentum and started to make a little noise, that's when the other people around my hometown go, "Oh, well, maybe there is something to this." And then that's when those people started to kind of get on board and start coming to shows, that sort of thing.
Well, I think it is so cool. And again, you know, I didn't just have you on because you're a funny guy or because you have a cool job. I had you on because you're doing something amazing that very few people have the guts to go down the path. And I thought maybe you'd encourage another dad. But hey, we're running out of time. But because I know that there are guys who are listening and they're like, "Well, I like my job. I don't want to do anything crazy." But they might want to take advantage of your services. You know, and I'll give you the Family Man Seal of Approval because I heard you do your stuff and you did a great job at a men's gathering. How might they get a hold of you, maybe see some samples?
Well, then go to my website, which is jeremynunes.com. That's N-U-N-E-S. And there's all kind of info there about how I do corporate shows or Christian shows. There's video clips right there. And then just to encourage dads, you know, I'm on iTunes. If you search my name, Jeremy Nunes, if you go to, I've got two albums on there. My second album, which is called Jeremy Nunes Is In Your House, the last track on there is called The Real Jeremy Nunes, and that is my testimony. And so if somebody really needs some encouragement on how I completely flipped over my life through Christ, I would really encourage guys to download that. And I think it costs $1 and I'll get maybe 25 cents for that. But I would really encourage guys to do that. And if nothing else, just to really help me, if you just gave me a like or a follow on Twitter, it does go a long way. It's at Jeremy Nunes, or Facebook is Comedian Jeremy Nunes.
That is awesome. Well, Jeremy, thanks for joining us. I know you have a busy morning. I'm not going to ask you to tell us a joke because people do that to me. They're like, oh, you're funny. Tell us something funny, Todd. I'm like, I don't have anything.
Well, we'll leave you with one, Todd. Just, I don't know if you guys ever travel through Illinois a whole lot, but just be aware the Illinois State Police are giving away $100 rewards for anyone who calls and turns in a drunk driver on the road. And for that very reason, I'm now $100 richer. My dad no longer speaks to me.
There you go. Hey, Jeremy, thanks for joining us. And maybe we'll bump into each other again somewhere out there.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Okay, see you, Jeremy.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Well, Scott, our next guest is Tui Wilson. And I met Tui, I don't know how many years ago. I was down in Florida. We were on the same front porch of a mutual friend, Bob Farewell. And Tui was, it was just kind of like one of those conversations where you hear somebody mention what he does, and then you're like, really? What? And then, you know, and then I'm all over it. And so over the years, we've kind of made these little email contacts along the way. Tui does amazing things, not just for his living, but he does crazy things like a giant swing for one of his kids, or, I mean, I'm talking giant. And he kind of pushes the boundaries on good common sense. But Tui, it is good having you with us.
Thank you, Todd. And it was 2007.
2007. Wow, I can't believe that. Let's start off with your name. How do you have a name? What's Tui? Is that short for something?
Nickname from childhood. My real name is Steven. Everything official says Steven. My mother still calls me Steven. No one really remembers for sure how Tui started. Like, well, a couple times stories came up and I'd ask and other people would go, I don't remember that. So,
so you're just Tui. Yeah, I understand. Hey, well, tell us about yourself and your family.
All right. Well, I am married and have three children. They are all grown. Actually, the two youngest, the 22 and 19-year-old daughters, they still live with us. And as of last Friday, I now have two grandchildren.
Wow.
Both grandsons. Wow.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Daughter-in-law, and they're 31, 32.
Wow. Well, then now here it is. Tell everybody what you do for a living.
So I am a juggler, a comedy juggler. I refer to myself as a comic stunt juggler.
Which means what?
Which means that the stuff I do is maybe a little more kind of stunt, as opposed to just standing there and like juggling three balls and telling jokes. The tricks are harder, more impressive, and a lot of times just shorter. So it's kind of building up to this short burst of, wow, I've never seen that before. It's kind of a what I'm after from audience.
Do you like light stuff on fire and then juggle it?
Yes. Actually, my big finale stunt, mostly at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. I will get to do it in International Falls tomorrow. Is today Wednesday? Friday night indoors. Is I stand on a ladder on a slack rope. The rope's on fire. The ladder's on fire. And I juggle fire.
I mean, when he says he stands on a ladder, he's not like standing on a step ladder. He's standing on a ladder you kind of lean up against your house that has two little feet, you know, the kind that you need something to lean it against. He doesn't lean it against anything.
Right. And it's a special ladder made for it, but it's still, yeah, it's just.
You know, that's a little crazy, right?
Well, that's what they say. But, to me, it was very, once I saw it at a juggler's convention back in 1984, I was like, oh, I've never seen that. Well, I should learn that. I went home. I was still living at home at the time, two, 3 years out of high school, and took our old wooden ladder that we didn't use anymore because we had an aluminum step ladder. I cut it shorter, cut a rung out, and learned in our driveway on that originally.
Wow. Wow. And you've performed in, like, where would you normally perform? I know that I think when we talked a long time ago, you were like doing kind of like a pre-show for the Dixie Stampede kind of thing.
Orlando at the time, which then closed actually right after 2 weeks after I left in December that year. They sold that actually.
You shut down the place. They couldn't continue without you.
Yep. So summertime, it might be county fairs. I've done the Minnesota State Fair a couple days the last couple of years. My big long running thing is the Minnesota Renaissance Festival, which runs 7 weekends in August and September. And last fall was, I had done 38 straight years at that.
Wow.
That was literally where I like learned to perform as a little street, hired as a little street juggler out of high school. And over the years there is where I really, you know, developed my act. But cruise ships, although it's been a while, but cruise ships occasionally, you know, I had a couple company holiday parties this winter. This Friday night, I'm doing actually it's my first ever full evening theater show at a theater up in International Falls, the very northern part of Minnesota, off of the coldest temperatures in the country.
Yeah, right.
Speaking of which, it's 28 below here right now.
Wow. You beat me by 10 degrees. So that's amazing. That's amazing. Well, how did you take that step? I mean, you already mentioned like in high school, you were maybe interested, you know, because I assume we were just talking to a guy, Jeremy, who is a comedian. It's one thing to tell everybody around you, hey, I want to be a comedian. They might go, hey, yeah, right. But when you go, hey, I want to be a juggler and balance on a ladder, I assume you get some odd looks and maybe not a lot of encouragement. How'd you make that transition into doing what you're doing?
You know, to give the story, I always give people, how'd you become a juggler real quick? I grew up skiing, skateboarding, water skiing. So physical skill was always of interest to me. Just before my senior year of high school, I got more interested in juggling. I learned how in about eighth grade from my next oldest brother, who for some reason knew how. And then senior year of high school, what are you going to do? You know, no clue what I might want to go to college or study to become. I literally thought maybe I'd like to be a juggler like I saw at the Renaissance Festival. That looks kind of fun. And so I just lived at home and worked part-time and practiced. And a year after graduating high school, got hired at the Renaissance Festival as a little street juggler. And then just over the years, now I would have to supplement. Actually, for most of my 20s, my winter job was coaching ski racing. I'd grown up walking distance of a little ski area in the Twin Cities. And other times over the years, I have read water, gas, and electric meters. And done some kind of rehab construction work with a guy that one of my brothers worked for. He's a sheetrocker. And then eventually got to a point where I was making enough with the juggling. And this was still, I mean, this was after I was married, actually, at this point, when that finally hit, to where then it was strictly as a juggler. And so in my case, it wasn't, you know, well, should I try being a juggler instead of what I'm doing? That was always what I was shooting for right out of high school.
Right, right. Because, you know, I I'll have guys who we were just talking just prior to this, you know, guys who will say, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. And I'm thinking, you know, really, it's almost a little unrealistic for someone to say, I want to quit my full time job that I'm making a decent paycheck and I'm going to start something from scratch and replace that same income. I mean, I assume maybe somebody has done it, but that's not usually the way it looks.
People have definitely done it and not generally. Yeah. So like that sort of thing. And, you know, I've certainly heard other people say this, you know, you try and ease into it somewhat, which I realize can be hard, though, if you have a full-time job and a family and you already don't have a lot of free time. Now you're going to try and devote some of your free time toward seeing if you can't actually make a career out of this thing that you really like, as opposed to what you may be doing.
Right. Right. And I remember, you know, in my journey, just praying and saying, God, I can't give any more time to trying to be a speaker. I mean, if you want me to do that, you're going to have to free up the time somewhere else because I can't take more time away from my family. I can't take, you know, more time investing in that and just take this away from me if this is not the direction you want me to go.
Right. Oh, that's good.
So what's the best part of doing what you do?
Doing something that I truly do enjoy and love to do. I still, for me, 2 hours by myself in a room with a high ceiling practicing is two of my favorite hours. I'm 56 years old now, and I'm still trying to learn harder stuff. You know, my goal is to be doing harder stuff at 65 than I am now at 56. And so doing something again for me, physical skill is, you know,
that's your sweet spot.
Sweet spot, yeah. Kind of, you know. Sometimes I think of it as like a chariot's a fire line.
Mm. You know,
God made me the line in the movie. God made me fast, and I feel His pleasure when I run. Physical skill and that is, like you said, that's my sweet spot. That's where I feel like, wow, this is great. And being your own boss, which is also then the downside.
Right. Yeah, I was going to ask you, what's the hard part?
Hard part, you know, is the financial, in that I don't know what I'm making this year. I don't know what's what the check's going to say every 2 weeks.
Right.
You know, I get stretches of a couple months where I have no work. And, you know, hopefully I've had enough prior to that to have a little surplus. And sometimes it's gotten pretty tight. And I'll admit that a lot of that is just my own lack of commitment to the marketing end of things, which I know what to do, but I'm not real good always at getting there because I'm kind of the quintessential artist in that sense.
Right. I understand. I'm with you.
But yeah, I don't know. One of my theories is that I get older and doing all this stuff, I become more marketable.
Like, wow. Right. Right.
That old
right.
guy doing that crazy stuff.
I know it. Because I'll want to almost see you die.
Yeah, possibly. You know, they don't really, but there's always a certain
hope. There's a hope.
You know, you're certain always to get the kids in the audience. Hey, fall.
Yeah. So how about your family? Is it an easy thing for them to be on board? Is it hard sometimes? I mean, I know that I was talking to a guy who's a handyman and he makes a good living. And he was saying that his wife was encouraging another young guy who wanted to do the same type thing. Oh, don't do that. Get a regular job. Because I think she was looking at it as, you know, because then you could have health insurance and then you could, you know, we wouldn't have to worry about, you know, the month in January.
Yeah. You know, for them, I mean, at some level, like, especially for the kids, it's his dad's job. You know, yeah. It's what I've always done. So it's dad's job. You know, they don't know any different. Certainly as they've gotten older, they've realized my daughters helped me out at the Renaissance Festival, have for a number of years now. They swap weekends coming out and help me set up, take down, pass the hat, and help me with one of the tricks at the beginning. My daughters actually both do circus aerial stuff.
Huh.
But they like to do, they go, one of them is in fact teaching at the same place that they had been taking classes in Minneapolis for a number of years.
That's cool.
But so they, you know, and my wife, you know, I think there's some times where she would, you know, she wouldn't mind if there was just a regular steady income stream that we knew was coming kind of thing. And she's actually, as a girl who have gotten older, she's also an assistant manager at a Dollar Tree here in town now. Mm-hmm. I just be doing my stuff. So, I mean, they've all, and again, I was juggling when I met her. So she knew.
Right. She knew what she was getting into.
She hoped you would give it up.
That's right.
My wife has been hoping I'd give up music dreams our whole time together. So.
I don't think any musician ever gives up music dreams.
No.
I got a brother like that.
So do you have trouble getting insurance?
You just tell them you're a juggler.
Okay.
That's right. You not know, on top of a burning ladder part.
They don't ask for trick specific.
You leave out the death-defying part.
Yeah. So, and actually, when I started, my parents, they weren't necessarily supportive or not supportive. I think they were just kind of, well, you know, I mean, I was a fifth of six kids. Five of us were boys, you know, at the time I'm coming along doing anything. It's like, yeah, whatever. Plus, you know, I was a good kid. I wasn't getting into trouble or anything. And so, you know, all right, I guess if he's doing this juggling thing, so be it. So basically they've generally always been supportive in whatever form that looks like. And actually, as far as the family last night, I was telling my girls I was going to be on here and my daughter Molly says, well, maybe I should get there if they want, you know, information about the father and the kids and that. Maybe I should get up and get on it. I say, well, it'd certainly be more informative, at the very least, more entertaining.
That's right. That's right. That's why we don't ask them to be on it.
That's a good idea.
So what would you tell a guy who maybe is sitting there listening and maybe he's had this thing that he's thought about? And again, maybe it's not like a juggler. Maybe it's he just wants to start a lawn mowing business or something like that. What would you tell a guy who's thinking about leaving maybe some security for something that others might think that's crazy?
Yeah. And again, I would say that probably depends somewhat on the situation. If it's just the guy and he's the only one he's responsible for.
You're talking to dads here, so they're all true. Responsible here.
Right. Well, you never know who listens, but
that's true.
You know, I guess talk to your family about it and say, hey, here's where I'm at. Here's what I'm thinking. And like you said earlier, the idea of trying to ease into it, for lack of a better term, you know, unless you've got a really big pile in the bank to exist on for a while, you get things going and you have a really good idea that it's going to work. But you got to run the number. If you're going to do a lawn mowing business, what can you charge to get a lawn mowed? How many lawns can you,
right,
you know?
And maybe you start by cutting one while you still have a job, or two while you still have a job.
Exactly. Or, yeah, maybe one a day when you get home at night.
Right, right.
And how does that go? When you get paid, and then, you know, I don't know. I, for one, love walking barefoot through the yard while I cut the grass.
Yes, my dad would pass out right now. So would I, because I was told early, you never cut the grass without hard-toed shoes on. That was just my dad's little mantra.
Yeah, I know that, but being bare feet is so good for your feet, and it feels so good in the grass, and, you know, it's a mulcher. There's nothing kicking out.
You're also the guy who was swinging his kid on a 25-foot tall swing.
17-foot.
17-foot. Well, it looked bigger in the picture.
A couple of pine trees.
It was awesome.
I'm also the guy who cut a gate in our deck railing and moved the tramp closer so they could jump off the deck onto the tramp.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I know there are some guys who want to see what you do. What's the best way to see some of your stuff? Because I've seen some of it on the internet. Where can they go to find you?
So there is TuiWilson.com, T-U-E-Y Wilson.com. And I'm assuming you'll probably have links in the...
Right, we can do that, yeah.
So I'll send you a couple.
Okay.
And that is admittedly a website that really needs to be rebuilt. But my old promo video is there, and there's also then a separate video of that big flaming trick. If you go to Vimeo and look me up, I have some newer promo videos that I have made on there. Like, a lot of times people just want, they don't need my website. They just want a link to a video.
Right.
The newer ones get sent there. And I've got like a minute and a half one, a 3.5 minute one there. So my old one. The other one is, if you got any dads out there listening who are involved in Upward basketball programs at their churches or any Upward sports programs, I do perform at Upward Award nights at the end of their season. Mm. And I have a website specifically geared toward that that's called awardnightjuggler.com.
Awardnightjuggler.com.
And it's admittedly a little late in the season this year, but some people are still booking that. So again, if you're not directly involved, but you got kids in it, you could, you know, give the information to your league director or someone, and not this year, it might set them up for next year.
I'll tell you, I've been to a lot of boring award nights. I think this, you would be great at an award night banquet.
Thank you.
Well, Tui, it has been a pleasure talking with you.
I also have a Facebook page for anyone that does
go ahead.
Thing. And not super active on it, but there are some fun on the road videos at the page. And
that's awesome.
They're up there occasionally that don't go other places.
Well, thanks for taking the time to be with us. I hope you survive the polar vortex of 2019.
Yeah, it's this is it. This is their coldest day of the year for sure.
That's awesome. That's awesome. But I know you guys, you up in Minnesota, they're just starting to say, cold enough for you?
Exactly.
So you, no problem up there. Thanks for joining us, and keep all those balls in the air.
Will do. Thank you, Todd.
See you, Tui.
Bye.
Well, Scott, those are two unique jobs. I mean, a comedian and a juggler balancer. But this last ad we're going to talk to, Kirk Johnson, he does something unique. And this has really kind of got me started on this whole topic for today, because he had sent me an email and I saw his little, you know, where you put your name down at the bottom. I don't know what you call that. What do you call that, Scott? You put your name at the bottom. You're not your signature.
I'm pretty sure it's called a signature.
Okay. The signature thing. And it had this thing that he did, and I clicked on it and I'm like, whoa, that's kind of cool. So, Kirk, we're glad to have you on the line. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your family?
Well, sure. Well, first, it's an honor to be on, so thanks for having me. Well, I'm married to a beautiful young lady named Connie Johnson, and we've got two boys who are 7 and 4, but within the next month will be 8 and 5. And Jeremiah is our oldest, and Andrew is our younger one.
And where do you live?
Marietta, Georgia, just northwest of Atlanta. So,
oh yeah. So the polar vortex has dipped its ugly talon down by you guys, but you're not doing too bad, right?
No, it's funny. They canceled schools yesterday in anticipation of it, and we didn't get a lick of snow or ice. So it's, you know, it's supposed to be 42 today, and no ice on the road or anything. So we just got a free day. Of course, that doesn't impact us since we homeschool.
Oh yeah. Yeah, a bunch of snowflakes. I'm telling you, that's this generation. Yeah, we were just talking to Tui Wilson up in Minnesota, and he said right now it's 28 below zero.
Oh, man. Well, my brother lives in Milwaukee, and he and his family, so we often trade punches back and forth with that.
Right. Yeah, today we're at, right now it's 17 below zero here, so it's still a little chilly. I'm sitting here. I never even told Scott. I'm sitting here with one of those furry hats on, you know, that look like Nanook of the North, and I've got that on, and then I've got my headphones over that, so I'm trying to stay warm, trying to stay warm. Well, Kirk, okay, tell us what you do now for a living.
Well, I'm a mascot, but it's more than that. So 10 years ago, my wife and I created a character, and his name is Gutsy the Flying Fox, and we go into schools and churches and libraries and county agricultural fairs and birthday parties and those kind of things, and we just we entertain people. I jump off a trampoline and dunk a basketball. I was a mascot for the Atlanta Hawks for a dozen years and part of the time in there too for the Braves. And my favorite part of the job just became going to schools and doing events. And so we just created our own character, and that was about 10 years ago. And we've just been running with it ever since. My wife is the MC, I should say, too. So what makes it cool for us is that we get to travel as a family. And it really is a family business for us.
That is so cool. That is so cool. Because I watched your video. I think you were at a birthday party, or maybe you were just taking a video so you could put it on the internet. And it was kind of like, you know, your wife would kind of do the announcements. You'd kind of goof off with the kids, dunk things and flips and flop down in mats. And it looked awesome. Well, how'd you get to, what do you just sign up for, you know, a mascot job? How'd you get there?
I was a gymnast at Arizona State, and it became kind of a recruiting ground for mascots to the NBA, believe it or not. The Phoenix Suns Gorilla, who is kind of the dean of NBA mascots, he's been on the cover of a lot of the video games back in the 90s, and was back when the NBC used to carry the NBA. They would start each week with him running down the court and dunking, and that was the intro to a show. So he just became really famous at the time, and he was prior to me 4 or 5 years after that, but I was number six. You know, the Houston Rockets nabbed one of those guys, and then the Charlotte Hornets, and somewhere along the way, I was the Atlanta Hawks were looking for someone, and I knew a few of those people, and I had done some dunk shows with the Suns at the time, and so it, believe it or not, it was kind of a natural transition, even though it was, you know, it was like the greatest job. I had just finished college, my gymnastics career was over, and I thought I was going to go into kind of a traditional job, and I get a call to perform in the NBA and stay active and be in front of crowds. And so it was really an exciting time for me.
That is so cool. Cause I know Scott was going to ask you something. I was trying to think what he was going to ask you. Oh, cause as a gymnast, he wants to know if you can do the Iron Cross.
Yeah, I could, you know, I'm 47 now. So, I haven't been up on a set of rings in a while, but yes, I could.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was pretty strong back in the day, but pommel horse was my Achilles heel for sure. I was okay, but that was my Achilles heel. So I could hold an Iron Cross, no problem.
Yeah, there was a special move that they did on the pommel horse named after a guy. What was it when something whirl or something like that?
I think you're probably a Thomas Flair.
Flair, that was it. That's right.
Yeah, it was named after Kurt Thomas, the famous.
Kurt Thomas, yeah, I remember that. Uh-huh. Well, that's cool. So if you want to be a mascot, really, you want to go then through gymnastics.
You know, no, everybody's got a different story. You know, if you look at like Major League Baseball mascots or the college mascots, a lot of these guys are really just traditional class clowns. And most of them have really strong type A personalities. And I'm a little bit of a wallflower. And so some of these guys you meet outside of costume and you're like, you can see it. And then most people meet me and they're like, that doesn't fit your personality at all. But I've always enjoyed flipping in front of people and just doing cool tricks. And so it was a natural fit for me.
So is that the best part of doing what you do? Well, or maybe it's more than that. What's the best part of being Trusty the Flying Fox?
It's Gutsy.
Gutsy.
Yeah. So like you've got guts. That's okay. Well, my wife and I are both encouragers. We love to encourage people. And when we visit a lot of elementary schools, and we're often in front of 500 or 600 kids at a time. And we get to give them positive messages like, you know, talking about character education, and we tell them that we've got a drug-free program during October that they use at schools. And so we just love to encourage kids. She was a PE teacher, you know, early on in our marriage. And this is kind of a cool story. We were at an event, and I had a different guy emceeing for us. And he was very reliable. He's a world-class MC. He had been kind of a DJ MC for the Harlem Globetrotters. So he's really good. Mm. And he called us, and he said, "Hey, I'm running a little bit late. I'm behind a wreck in traffic." And he said, "But go ahead and load the kids in the gym." And we did. And then he called us a few minutes after that and said, "I'm not going to make it in time." So we had about 500 kids in a gym. And I looked at Connie and I said, "Hun, we can't send these kids back. You're going to have to speak at this show." And that was about 10 years ago. And she about passed out, but she's been speaking ever since.
Wow. Isn't that amazing? That's amazing. What about that? You mentioned the time that you get to do it as a family. What do you like about that? Because wouldn't it be easier, people? Because I get to do mine with my family, and people say, "Oh, that's so great! You get to do it with your family." I'm like, but it does make it a lot harder. It would be a lot easier if you could just throw it in the back of your car and drive there. But yeah, do you enjoy the time with your family doing it?
I do. There are some obstacles, you know, especially. You know, but when our boys were younger, when they were newborns, you know, we would get to a show and we would give schools a discount if they would provide childcare. Mm. So that became kind of our business model for a little bit, but it was still hard because sometimes, you know, we had passed along a 4 or 5 month old and they would be crying and my wife would be trying to speak up in the front.
right.
You know, and then I'm the worst dad ever, you know, and so, but you know, God's blessed it. You know, I enjoy doing what I'm doing, but my wife is so good at speaking. She really connects well with kids. Mm. And so we just make a good team.
Well, what's the hardest part or the scary part of doing what you do?
Well, I think probably when we're in a new venue for the first time. So, you know, if we go to school now, we know what we're getting into. Or if we go to a church and we do a lot of upward sports events, upward basketball, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And we've been in those, you know, venues a lot. Well, the very first time we did an upward basketball event, we were at First Baptist Church of Woodstock here locally, which is like, you know, that's like an 8 or 10,000 member church. Mm-hmm. And we step into this thing and it looks like an amphitheater and it's, you know, 3,000 people in the crowd looking at us. And my wife has cards in her hand and she's nervous and she drops a couple of those. I'm backstage, my heart's pounding. And so I think probably just that fear of the unknown. And then, but you know what? That was 10 years ago and we've done a bunch of them since then. So.
And really, do you think it gets easier? Because I know like, someone was telling me, and I think they're right. They said, you know, it's kind of like a muscle that when you have to live by faith, whether that's on, you know, is God going to supply? It gets easier the more you do it. The more you have to trust God in all those circumstances, the easier it gets.
Yes, but there's still fearful times when we traditionally have a slow time in November and December as it kind of leads up to Christmas and everybody, you know, schools are letting out. And so, you know, when we've been preparing all year and we've had a good year, and then all of a sudden we don't have any work for, or very little work for a month and a half or 2 months. It's like, Lord, we can, you know, you can provide for us financially, but He always does. And
He always does.
You know, yeah, but you know, I'd be lying if I said we weren't scared at times. Hmm.
So what would you tell the guy? I've asked all the other two guys this. What do you tell the guy who's, you know, maybe he's listening to you and he's like, you know, he's not thinking, "Oh, I'm going to become a mascot." but maybe he's got something else that he's been thinking about in the back of his head. And what would you tell him that first step should be, you know, or how should he begin that journey?
That's a great question. And I honestly think if you can maintain your normal job and then kind of start doing your dream job, if you will, on the side, and then just keep working that until at some point you've got enough income or enough demand where, you know, you've run out of sick days to take off for work or whatever. And it just, there's a demand that you're like, I think I'm ready to make this transition. But, you know, you do need to make a spreadsheet and work a budget and see if it makes sense, because you have to factor in insurance and there's always more cost than you think. And then another thing that someone really helped us with is, We're big Dave Ramsey people. We're like the anti-debt people. So we were in the middle of our paying off all our debt when we made this transition. And so we saved up about 6 to 8 months worth of living expenses as we got started. And that really carried us through as well. So, you know, wait until the demand is there, and then also save yourself, you know, try to get 6 or 8 months worth of expenses, because that's going to do you some good, because you're going to have, inevitably, there's more expenses that pop up than you realize. And so save yourself a little bit of money, you know, 6 or 8 months worth of living expenses, and then that'll really cushion that blow.
And really, I would say too, I would assume you'd agree, to lighten the load. I mean, if you've got a huge house payment to make, it's really not very realistic to think that, you know, you can maybe replace that mortgage payment as easily as, you know, maybe you get a smaller house, so you have something less to do. Or if you have 3 cars, maybe you get rid of one of them. Or, you know, to lighten the load so you don't need as much income as well.
I'm a bit of a minimalist at heart, and we got a nice house, but absolutely, the less that you can have that is pulling at you and tearing away from, you know, and just added responsibility. I grew up with pets, but we don't have pets because it would be such an obstacle to trying to travel and maintain the care for them. And so
tell me about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess you guys have some, correct?
I know I didn't want to, but let's not even go there. Okay.
All right.
But I agree. I'm with you.
Yeah. So anything that can make your life simpler, and especially with financial obligations. Yeah. I mean, the other nice thing is when you're not desperate, when you first start work, you can pick the jobs you really want to, because, you know, otherwise you start and you've got to take everything. And there may be some that you're like, I really don't want to do a 3-year-old's birthday party, you know, and have kids spitting up on my new costume, you know? So, you know, you can be a little more selective.
Well, Kirk, it's been great talking with you. And, you know, I know there's some dads listening who might be in the area, or maybe, you know, a little farther out, who might want to take advantage of Gutsy and maybe have an upwards basketball awards night or a church. What's the best way to see more of your stuff and to get a hold of you?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Yeah, so our website is gutsyfox.com. So GUTSYFOX.com. We're certainly on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and we have a YouTube channel as well. So those are the ways, social media wise, you can reach out to us. It's got my contact information on there. So those are probably the best ways. And, you know, we've got all kind of, if you use our hashtag GutsyFox, then you'll see some videos and stuff pop up as well.
And I mean, a dad might even be able to put you on to maybe their kid's school, correct?
Absolutely. You know, we travel primarily in the Southeast. But during upward basketball season, you know, kind of the early February through mid March, we're all over the U.S. And so, but we drive everywhere since we have a mat and a trampoline and all that's just easier for us. So yeah, if you're in the Southeast or within a 10 or 15 hours from Atlanta, then give us a call.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Kirk, thanks for joining us. Keep bouncing high and keep doing what you're doing. And thanks for being an example to all of us sometimes scared dads to step out in faith.
Well, thanks for having me on. I need to give a shout out to the Johnson Ferry Baptist Homeschool Group at our home church, and also our Classical Conversations group. They're all rooting us on as well.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. I think it was the Johnson Ferry, wasn't I? Was I there?
You were. I met you briefly. We just came and
You didn't have the costume on then, though, did you?
No, I wasn't. No, just a normal guy sitting back there. Just really, really, really short with a pretty wife.
I can't remember what you were wearing then, but Well, hey, thanks for having us, and maybe we'll have to stop in again down at Johnson Ferry.
We would love that. Thanks so much, Todd.
Hey, keep doing what you're doing.
All right, take care.
Well, Todd decided to ditch me here and let me do the ending, so I'll just say thanks, Jeremy, Tui, and Kirk. That was awesome. We really appreciate you guys for coming on the show. And for Todd and all of us here, just remember,
you did that.
And that's our show for this week, dads. Thanks for joining us for the Family Man Show with Todd Wilson. If you have a question for the show, you can email Todd at familyman@familymanweb.com. If you have a question for me, you can reach me at scott@unsocializedmedia.com. Thanks for joining us, Dad. Have a great week.
And Scott, America wants to know, why are you always so tired?
That's a good question.
No, America, I've had several people just this week, like, email me and go, just little, these little snippets, like, yeah, what's with sled riding?